This is Phil Farron. And I am driving home. It's Thursday today. I don't expect to be coming in tomorrow. Which means that I get to go home and write. And I think I'm not done with the book yet. I was so close on Monday. But I find that after I get up above 2,000 words, 2,200 words or so, I start getting tired. If and when I ever get back to writing full time, I like to write about 6 hours a day, which at 250 words an hour, which is a wimp pace, you know, that's 2,500 words. I can do that. Especially I can do it if it's a section that it's just narrative and I'm just going along and running off my mouth. The problem is the end of this book has an epilogue. The epilogue is supposed to make people cry. So it's a little higher level of skill writing those epilogues than pretty much the rest of the book. And I had gotten about 2,100 words into the epilogue and I couldn't make it work. As it turns out, that was Sunday. Monday, I started taking another run at it, but it wasn't quite right. And Tuesday had some other issues I had to deal with, and I was trying to write after I had dealt with some of those issues, and it was... My emotional awareness at that point was just shot. So then Wednesday, took another run at it. I got closer on Wednesday. I was kind of heading in the right direction. Tonight, I usually don't spend too much time writing on Thursday nights. By the time I upload the podcast, get my exercising done, and my wife and I talk on Thursday nights. And Tuesday nights, we set aside time to do that. And then we usually go out on Saturdays. So I usually only have about an hour's worth of writing. But I think I can get closer tonight, a fur piece in. What I'm hoping is then tomorrow I'll have a good solid stretch of time, several hours, where I'm thinking at this point, it finally feels like it's, you know, falling in. The protagonist in the epilogue, she's dealing with a lot of turmoil at that point, and I was trying to remake her reactions at one point, reactions of anger, that I could then slip sideways on that anger and then hit the moment and, you know, pull emotion that way, but I just couldn't make that formula work with the particular type of situation I was working with. And so then I finally last night started realizing that slip was not going to happen. It just wasn't going to happen right. And so once I realized that, then on the way into work, I thought, okay, I've got to restructure. I've got to take the anger part out and restructure to where she stays helpful. And the situation is futile, but she's still going to soldier through because it's the thing to do, you know. So you get the sacrifice component starting to light up in there. And as I was thinking about it, I was thinking, yeah, that's better. Better. I'm hoping. You know, it's interesting because trying to hit the moment, there's an art to it, and sometimes things make perfect sense that they should work. They should work beautifully, but when you get it down on paper, sometimes it's just not happening, and then you got to go in and tweak, and you got to feel forward and figure out, why did this just come apart? What is it that's distracting us from the main emotional line? It's pretty interesting. It is just pretty interesting. Fascinating how the human heart works and how easy it is for us to be distracted from those things.
The other problem last night was that...
Wednesday is my fast day, and so by the time I hit about 9 o'clock, 9:30, I ain't feeling nothing, you know? And I got to the place where it was 9:45, and I felt like I could keep going down a track, and I just looked at it, and I thought, you know, you are blown. Just might as well give up. I can also get to the point when I'm doing these things that I've cried enough, and I've blowed my nose enough, and my sinuses have swelled up enough that sometimes I just get to the point where I have a sinus headache, and or the beginnings of a sinus headache, and I just have to quit, because then your head's hurting, and you just can't make the connection. So it's a very, very interesting thing. I have friends that leave their kiddos at a daycare near me, and this is the second time this week that they've been going into the daycare while I've been driving past
the daycare. Excuse me.
Sorry. It's been a big week. But it's been a good week. Got some things accomplished that I needed to get accomplished. And we're on track on the projects. We have a scramble next week to get a few things taken care of. But shouldn't be too bad. Should be doable. It's all doable at this point. So I'm excited about getting this book wrapped up. And then it's going to be a mad race to see how fast I can get it proofed and get a cover put together for it. Because it was supposed to be out February 1st, and there's no way that's going to happen. But March 1st, I think is possible. If I can get the episode landed, March 1st is possible. So that's 22 to go. So there you go. Just keep chipping away at it. The next one just cannot be 155,000 words, which is where I'm at now. And it's probably, by the time it's all said and done, going to 157,000 words. But the rest of them just can't be that long. So I've just got to tone it down. Not write so much. It's hard, though. Stories, they take on a life of their own, and they just have to be told. And you just have to write them out. So, anyways, that's news from Lake Wobegon. My wife is now not only the children's choir director at Praise, she's also the adult choir director at Praise, so she enjoyed moving back into that position. And they had their first rehearsal Wednesday night, and that seemed to go well. And she told me, well, at least from my perspective, it went well. Which, that's about all the perspective you have. So, but she was really excited about it. She said the people seemed to be responsive to her. And so that's good. Because she's it's allowing her to move back into where she's really gifted for. And so that's fun to see. In other news, all is pretty much puttering along. It's good. This week, there were a few other things that kind of caught my eye at the last minute this week, but I'd already prepared notes on this, and I thought this was pretty interesting topic. My daughter had forwarded this to me several weeks ago. Because we see interesting societal things and bounce them back and forth. All three of us do. That would have been very interesting. There was a person that decided they were just in too much of a hurry to wait, and they came roaring around my left side. You might have heard it on the... And the person in front of me was turning left, but thankfully they didn't turn left right into them, because then you would have heard the accident right on the podcast. But anyways, my wife forwarded me this article, and I have mentioned in the past that as I get older, I see some of these efforts to constrain people's behavior to be somewhat akin to prohibition with all the attending problems thereof. I have said on the podcast that sometimes I think we should just legalize everything and then use all that money that we're spending for enforcement, use it on something worthwhile, like helping people get unaddicted to things. I've got a podcast coming up, which is really interesting, an article that I read last night about addiction and the cause of addiction, and it is pretty interesting. But anyways, that's not what the article is about today. So, in that vein of legalizing everything, one of the things that I have in the past thought, well, why don't you just legalize it and regulate it, make some money off of it for the government, and go forward that way, is with prostitution. In the past, there have been times in the past when prostitution was not illegal. And so when I came across this article, it was interesting to me because they actually talked later on in the article about some efforts that have been made to legalize prostitution and what has happened. So anyways, the article that my daughter forwarded to me was about Sweden's prostitution solution. And the more I read it, I thought, wow, this is a pretty good idea. According to the article, in just 5 years, Sweden has dramatically reduced the number of women in prostitution. It said in the capital city of Stockholm, the number of women in street prostitution has been dropped by 2/3. The number of johns there has been reduced 80%. There are other major Swedish cities where street prostitution has all but disappeared. Gone too, for the most part, are the renowned Swedish brothels and massage parlors, which proliferated during the last 3 decades of the 20th century when prostitution in Sweden was legal. So Sweden tried legal prostitution, and it didn't work out very well, and they came up with another solution. They said, in addition, and this is when it started catching my attention, the number of foreign women now being trafficked into Sweden for sex is nil. The Swedish government estimates that in the last few years, only 200 to 400 women and girls annually have been sex trafficked into Sweden, a figure that's negligible compared to the 15 to 17,000 females yearly trafficked into neighboring Finland. No other country nor any other social experiment has come anywhere near Sweden's promising results. So, okay. So, what did they do? Well, after they did years of research and study, in 1999, Sweden passed a legislation with basically two big prongs. One of the prongs was it criminalized the buying of sex, and it decriminalized the selling of sex. So if you went out and solicited a young woman as a prostitute and tried to pay her to have sex, you were committing a criminal act, but she was not committing a criminal act by offering to have sex for money. The key component here is that in Sweden, prostitution is regarded as an aspect of male violence against women and children. It is officially acknowledged as a form of exploitation of women and children and constitutes a significant social problem. Gender equality, this is what someone was saying, gender equality will remain unattainable as long as men buy, sell, and exploit women and children by prostituting them. Okay, so Sweden basically said, okay, you buy sex from someone, that's a criminal act. Someone sells you sex, that's not a criminal act. And what we're going to do is we are not only going to say that, but we are also going to commit monies to help any prostitute who wants to get out of the business, and we're going to commit further monies to educate the public to the fact that prostitution is violence against women. Okay, that's a pretty interesting idea. They said for the first couple of years, nothing really happened. Didn't make much difference. And they actually traced that to the fact that the police made very few arrests and everything was pretty much going on as it had, because the idea hadn't really sunken in. But, you know, they redoubled their effort, because they determined the police themselves needed in-depth training and orientation to what the Swedish public and legislature already understood, that prostitution is a form of male violence against women, and that the exploiters slash buyers needed to be punished, and the victims slash prostitutes needed to be helped. So, the Swedish government put up extensive funds, and the country's police and prosecutors, from the top ranks down to the officers on the beat, were giving intensive training and a clear message that the country meant business. Then things started turning around. And they said that today, not only do Swedish people continue to overwhelmingly support their country's approach to prostitution, 80%, it said, are in favor of it in the national polls. The country's police and prosecutors have also come around to be among the legislation's staunchest supporters. The prostitution legislation benefits them in dealing with sex crimes, particularly in enabling them to virtually wipe out the organized crime element that has plagued other countries where prostitution has been legalized or regulated. So, you know, there's really nothing stopping any other country from doing this. And they said, in fact, there are several countries right now that are investigating this as a potential solution. They said that Scotland did a big study, and they looked at all the different approaches that are being tried around the world. And one of the things that was very interesting to me, they said that legalization and or regulation of prostitution, according to this study, led to a dramatic increase in all facets of the sex industry, b, a dramatic increase in the involvement of organized crime in the sex industry, c, a dramatic increase in child prostitution, d, an explosion in the number of women, foreign women and girls trafficked into the region, and E, indications of an increase in violence against women. None of which are outcomes that you want to encourage. They said in Victoria, Australia, where a system of legalized, regulated brothels was established, there was such an explosion in the number of brothels that it immediately overwhelmed the system's ability to regulate them, and just as quickly, these brothels became a mire of organized crime, corruption, and related crimes. In addition, surveys of the prostitutes working under systems of legalization and regulation find that the prostitutes themselves continue to feel coerced, forced, and unsafe in the business. So, you know, those numbers are very, very interesting. They said in Sweden, when the government followed through with ample social services funds to help those prostitutes who wanted to get out, 60% of the prostitutes in Sweden took advantage of the well-funded programs and succeeded in exiting prostitution. Okay, that's good. That's good. So, in wrapping this up, they said in the article that in order to see prostitutes as victims of male coercion and violence, it requires the government first switch from seeing prostitution from the male point of view to the female point of view, and most, if not virtually all, countries of the world still see prostitution and every other issue from a predominantly male point of view. Very, very interesting. So the big question at the end, of course, was, and why can't we copy Sweden's success here? And the article concludes with, while it's probably true that we and other countries are still much more steeped in patriarchal darkness than Sweden, there's no reason we can't push for the policy changes that Sweden has made. The beauty of it is that once the ground's been broken and the proof of success has been established, it should be ever much easier to convince others to go down that path. And, you know, I agree. Because I certainly had a different viewpoint with regards to prostitution. That it was just another one of those prohibition things that you never really did stand a chance of beating. But, I mean, when you look at the statistics and you look at the successes, I'm getting my mail, it's pretty hard to argue with that. And so if that's something that works, definitely, that's a good idea that should be done. If it ever gets passed in this country, I don't know, but, you know, I'm going to do my little part to say, hey, look, this works, because ultimately I do like things that work. And when we factor this into the whole larger picture of women doing what they need to do to survive, it really does not bother me at all. I'm backing into my garage to classify women who are in prostitution as victims. I think that's a very legitimate way to classify them. And, you know, I think it's a good idea to spend governmental money to do what we can to help women get out of prostitution and to criminalize. This is a great idea. Criminalize men who are involved in prostitution, if that will help end this. And it sounds like it's working in Sweden. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.